Would your kind attention, I'm not an after-dinner speaker, for someone to just tell jokes, you don't need Aaron McKeffet. The paper I'm holding in front of me, to do it well, would take me at least 1 year of shagurim in gris. But I want within an hour to start the weekend. Is Alex here, the man who grabbed me and lassoed me, the glass man? So I just want to say what I'm doing. I was told the weekend is about Adam 1, Adam 2. I'm speaking about individual quests and accomplishments vis-a-vis collective quests and accomplishments. I'm putting the glass in the windows, but I'm leaving it for Alex to be a good man and cement it over Shabbat. Also, for those listening across the world, I just want to say that this is Friday morning, May 27th, 2016, and the Rebbe was lassoed by his students. The year is ending. There's only three more shiurim left. This Sunday, Monday. Next Sunday is Yom Yerushalayim. Monday afterwards is the final shiur. The week afterwards is Shavuot. I will be giving another shiur on Admat HaKodesh before I leave for the States, and that is in Beit Shemesh. The shul has a very fancy name, Ohel Yonah Menachem Book Launch. Wow, it's Rabbi Meir Lichtenstein's shul. And I'm speaking on a different topic altogether, living in two worlds, what we can learn from the movies. I'm doing this. Generally, I don't leave Yerushalayim. I don't speak anywhere else in Israel. My energies are limited, but it's my dear Talmud, Herb Cohn, the father of two other Talmudim of mine, Danny Cohn and Ezra Cohn, all Mismachim of the Yeshiva. Herb has written a new book on movies, and he's launching the book in Rabbi Meir Lichtenstein's shul. Now, down to work here. A personal life, and all of you are going to be rabbis, I trust. I see one medical doctor and one dentist sitting in front of me. So it may not, everything we're saying may not entirely apply to your quests and difficulties in life. But a rabbi and a rebbitzin, you're caught in a constant conflict, the individual vis-a-vis the community. I think when we're born, we're very individually oriented, we're very self-centered. The whole world revolves around the baby. I've seen Gedolei Yisrael pick up a baby and suddenly start talking a language that even the baby doesn't understand. Goo, 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 moo, moo, moo. And these are Gedolei Yisrael. And a baby, of course, is self-centered. Some of us never outgrow that. That's why we have so much divorce today. Lo aleinu, the world is very pleasure-oriented. No one shares a bed. I grew up with people who shared beds. No one even heard of that today. No one shares a car today. I've taught students who never wanted to go to Israel when I taught in the collegiate level. And the father had a promise, if you go for a year and study with that dummy Rakefet, I'm going to buy you a, when you come back, there's a Buick waiting for you in the garage in Lawrence. So it's a different world today. If we don't grow up, it's a very bad trait to bring to a marriage, and it's even equally terrible if you're a Rav, a Machaneich. If you don't have a feeling of collectivism, it's a challenge. I want to talk about my Rebbe's life. I think you know I gave 22 years of Shirim in the Kollel, and I would have gone back to it. The truth was, when I finished the series of 10 years, questions my students asked me, I was ready to go back to the Rav because I felt I'm teaching a generation that never saw the Rav, never heard the Rav, doesn't understand the Rav. But at that point, two tragedies hit me. When my mother died, and Rabbi Lichtenstein took ill. And you don't realize how traumatic that was for me. My mother, when Kolzman, you have a mother, you're a kid. So my mother died at 98. People couldn't believe I'm sitting shiver for my mother. But I was a kid until my mother died. Every morning, every morning I would visit her, and when she would say, Ani, how are you? The Lubavitcher Rebbe said the same thing. I was mechamen to the Rebbe. The Rebbe said, when his wife died, there's no one left in the world who calls me Mendy. So that ages you. Ani is gone. And then Reb Aaron's illness. The world without Reb Aaron Lichtenstein is a very, very poor world for me. So I decided at that point to do something I never did before, because I'm a Talmud, loyal to my Rebbe. Mori Rebbe taught me, I write about this in Washington, he taught me, never teach what you know. Only teach what you don't know. That way you gain and the students will gain. So I sinned and I started 4 years ago to teach something I know, for fear if I let it go, there's a lot I know that no one else knows, whatever the reasons are. So I started, as you know, in the Monday class, the history of Torah in modern times, and Baruch Hashem, the reaction has not been negative across the universe. I have another few years to deal with it. I have to finish the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and then I'm going into the history of the rabbinate in the Western world, in the United States particularly. Okay, so now we come to the Rav, his life. So first of all, I want to ask a question that Tova, Dr. Tova Soloveitchik Lichtenstein, in her hesped for Reb Aaron, a few weeks ago was his yahrzeit. I said a few words here of hesped, and Tova asked the question, did he have a youth? And the truth is, Reb Aaron did not have a total youth. Tova described how he was. I knew his parents yet. I knew his mother and father. And you have to know, Reb Aaron didn't grow up in a tree. His mother, for the ladies here, you should know, she wrote Chiddushei Torah under a pseudonym to publish in the Tells Rabbinic Journal. Her father, she was a Schwartz. Her father is one of the administrators. So you understand what I'm saying. And so they were taking Reb Aaron to the doctor. And Tova described, this is what I was told in a lunch foot, how the whole time his mother was teaching him a perek of Nach. The poor kid is going to the doctor, and on the way there he mastered an entire perek of Nach. Did the Rav have a childhood? And here I want to tell you one of the most moving stories I ever heard from the Rav's mouth. I heard it via tape already, because I was living in Israel. 73 was a very shocking experience. How we survived, I don't know until today. No one knows really. I can only quote Rabbi Shtisel B'chasdei Hashem. Because of what happened in 73, all the tzedaka money of the wonderful people known as Am Yisrael was directed to Israel, and the yeshivat was suffering. In the early 70s, or early 74, or late 73, the leaders of the yeshiva, the Rashi yeshiva, arranged a meeting with the JDC, the Joint Distribution Committee. Reb Moshe came, other Gedolei Yisrael, but they all agreed that the Rav should be the spokesman. You know, his English was a little better than Reb Moshe and Reb Yaakov and everyone else who came. And also he was well known to a certain degree beyond the Torah circles. So the Rav here is now approaching these leaders of the JDC, many of them big shots in Reform conservative temples. And the Rav begins his talk, and you can hear this on tape, Rabbi Klavan, again a legendary name, he was the Rav's right hand, he was the man who ran the rabbinical council. Rabbi Klavan retold the story many times, and it's on tape actually at an RCA convention in the 70s, right after this. And the Rav begins, gentlemen, I want to pay you a debt of gratitude. It's a debt that I've owed to you for many decades. And now's my chance to repay you. And the Rav said, one time in Chaslovich, when my father was rabbi, I came to the cheder, and the children were dancing outside the cheder. Thank you, Uncle Joint. Adankach, Uncle Joint. Adankach, Feta Joint. Thank you, Uncle Joint. Do you know why? It was right after World War I. And the joint gave out to all the Chadorim and all the Talmud Torahs sackets of chocolate powder. And we had chocolate milk, the biggest treat for us in Chaslovich, in White Russia, after the war. I want to thank you, Uncle Joint. I owe you this thanks many decades. Rabbi Glavin described, here were men who were multi-billionaires in terms of today, world-famous, accomplished businessmen. And there wasn't a dry eye in the room. And the president, the chairman, said, Rabbi Soloveitchik, what can we do for you? What do you want? And they poured millions into the yeshivat around the world. So you see, this story is fascinating. Number one, it shows the Rav as a little kid. And what was great about the Rav, he never denied he was once a little kid. I can tell you more stories in a second. I have some of them in in my two volumes on the Rav. The Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. Never denied he was a little kid. See, Art Scroll describes Gedolei Yisrael, they were born with kippot on their heads. When they turned over in their bed at night, the kippot did not fall off. That's the famous Shai Adnon story of the Yerushalmi Magid, who's giving Musar and Meir Sharim. So what are you going to yell at them? They're not Mechal Shabbos. They're Shom Rei Kashrut. They're Shom Rei Parat Mish. What are you going to yell? When you turn over in your beds at night, your yarmulkes fall off your heads. He was telling them off. So you see, the Rav was a kid. And you see here on two levels. On one hand, the kid is drinking chocolate milk. I think Alex will agree with me that that's a very individualistic quest. A happy kid. The world is chocolate milk. But you see the Rav as the leader of our people taking that story and raising millions, millions for Torah. More stories about the Rav as a kid. The Rav once described how poor they were. He said, and you know, the Rav became a total American. You have to understand the Rav and his brother, Aaron Soloveitchik. I don't have time to elaborate, but I'll give you a key. Maybe some of you can put it together on Shabbos. I always said, I knew them both, Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. My lips shake, but I did know the Rav intimately. For whatever the reasons are, there's a letter he wrote to me that Rabbi Lichtenstein called the most important letter the Rav ever wrote. It appears as a result of the kollel, the boy said, Rebbe, put that in, it'll be a haskama. And I said, you know, you're right. So it does exist in the first volume of the Rav, the world of... I also knew Rabarin very intimately. He wasn't my Rebbe in that sense, but I related to him as a Rebbe Mufak as well. I knew him very, very well. So I say about the Rav, he grew up in Europe with all the poverty that went with it. He knew how to appreciate America. Rabarin grew up in America. It's a big difference. He came to America 13 years of age, came into MTA, never left his father's shir, MTA, Yeshiva College, got smicha from the yeshiva. Rav Aaron already was an American. He already could see beyond the United States. The Rav basically had difficulty seeing beyond New England. So he would describe the poverty in Europe. He said, don't realize how lucky you are. You have balls to play with. Says, you know what we consider the ball? It's like my wife. My wife is an artist, so one of the mediums she works with is paper. We took paper and we pasted it together and we shaped it and we shaped it until it was a ball. So you see from that story too, you see a little kid in a gadol, in the body of a gadol b'Yisrael describing his childhood. But I say the best is the talk he gave at, again, I have to, it's history, you don't realize what I'm saying. David Applebaum used to tell me stories out of Chicago where he learned at Rabban. He said, and he would say to me, Rabban, for you it's history. For me, I'm living it and suffering. If you know what I'm talking about, Rabbi Dr. David Applebaum, Rabban Soloveitchik in Chicago. So, you don't know Rabbi Riskin. You know Rabbi Riskin is the chief rabbi of Efrat. He was building an empire in America. Why you were shaking. He had dreams, high schools he organized, then a based medrash, and he's going to give smicha, and he had all these dreams. It never worked out in America. It worked out a lot better, obviously, in Israel. But at the point that he has all these dreams, it's like the mid-70s, he got some very heavy money from people who also supported YU, but now they're giving Riskin, he was called the Boy Wonder, Stevie Wonder, the Boy Wonder, and they're giving him heavy money, and he made this dinner, and he got the Rav to speak. Wow, I have it, all the details you can get in the Rav, the world of. He got the Rav to speak. And the Rav gave a fabulous talk there. And Malk and I have a big schut because the tape, the Rav lent the tape to someone, you don't know what the reels were, big reels, and it got all twisted. And the tape fed into my hands from America. Can I do anything about it? And Malk and I worked hours upon hours, and we succeeded. And you got to see what a reel was. Danny, do you remember what reels were? Before your time, or you remember? No, not the cassettes. The reels. All twisted. And we untwisted it, and I broke it down to cassettes, and I copied every word. I redid it in the kollel in my 22 years on the Rav. That was one of the shirim I redid in the kollel. It was something special. I quote quite extensively from it in the Rav. But there's one part that I couldn't get over. The Rebbe is telling, when I say Rebbe, I mean the Rav, of course. The Rebbe is talking about Cheder and how everyone thought he was a dull kid. But the kid next to him, and he literally, he's practically maledicting the kid, who they thought was smart, and he was the biggest faker, you know, and you can hear the tension in the Rav's voice. 50 years later, 60 years later, he's mad at this kid who was a big faker, a gewaisen shtick, fakerei in the cheder, and the Rav they thought was a dull kid. You got to hear it to believe it. By the way, I have it written word by word. He's talking about chinuch, how you know what chinuch is all about, and he's praising Rabbi Riskin, that Rabbi Riskin has that ability to be mechanech. All right. The Rav had a childhood. As a matter of fact, I really think, having known Rav Aaron and his parents, I think the Rav had a better childhood than Rav Aaron's. Zichronim Tzaddikim Levracha. They were, a world without Rav Aaron is not a world. You know, with the Rav, all right, he, the end years were very sad, but he was active till 85. And sad, but that's life. Take advantage. Big shulik knows that sefer kohelet. You know what I'm talking about, Chazal. And boy, when you get older, you find out there's no truer volume than kohelet. But on the other hand, if I can quote Rakefet, if you're going to live kohelet, you're going to be a horrendous rebbe. I have a lot of divrei Torah on this. After hours of divrei Torah, I reached the conclusion a rebbe has to live all three together. He can't have periods. Shir hashirim, Mishlei Kohelet, all intertwined. And Baruch Hashem, if those of you that have attended my Shirurim, you'll notice all three periods live simultaneously. And I have this from the Rav, but I have elaborated much more. All right, then the Rav, of course, goes on to Berlin. And again, I would say he's an individual yet. His quests are for himself. I don't think there's any great world vision yet. He wants to see what culture is all about, what Berlin is all about. And here, of course, you come to a period that, as the Rav himself said, the attraction of Berlin, every top mind from Europe went to Berlin. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rav Chaim Heller, the Sri Deyesh, Reb Yitzchak Kutner, Professor Avraham Yoshua Heschel, and of course, from the other side of the Mechitza, the greatest lady to live in the 20th century, who I had the schut of bringing into the Kollel as a teacher, a Rebbe, a professor, Nechama Leibovitch. Everyone was in Berlin. It's hard to believe what came out of Berlin. Who would believe, as the Rav said, 10 years later, his own professors who guided his doctorate, Nazi sympathizers. And it's beyond comprehension. And the Rav was seeking in Berlin, and I need not tell you, he sought out. Reb Chaim Heller became his father's substitute. His Derech Heretz for Reb Chaim was beyond words. And I was a kid, you know, I was playing in front of the yeshiva. I have a schut when I was a high school kid. I didn't want to take off the summer. I wanted to learn. So we bothered Mr. Abrams, and I got to give YU credit. They hired a Rebbe to teach us every summer. Brought in a mere survivor, a Shanghai survivor, Rav Shmuel Feibershevitz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. His picture appears in the famous picture of the Shanghai crowd in the shul there. He was in the second row. You can see him smiling. He was my Rebbe a number of summers. And Aaron Lichtenstein was there. He stayed around during the summer. So after we learned and we ate, you know, in the afternoon already, we're going to have some fun. We were poor kids. No one went away to camp. No one heard of camp. It was a different era, a different world. And I'm not, you know, I'm not saying your world is worse or my world is better, chas v'chalila, but it was a different world. So I'm playing ball in front of the yeshiva with my classmate, Izzy Perlmutter, Rabbi Dr. Israel Perlmutter. And you know who Izzy Perlmutter? He should live and be well. He lives in Israel. I taught his daughter at Mechala in the Israeli section. Izzy, psychologist. You know Dr. Perlmutter now? Izzy Perlmutter. So he's playing with me in front of the yeshiva. And there this tall man comes over. Van Dyke, clean shaven here. Leans over and says, Yisrael, Yisrael. Israel, Israel, your grandfather wants to see you. Come with me. And here is, and this is Rabbi Soloveitchik. And we knew, I mean, I was a kid in high school, but I knew Rabbi Soloveitchik. I was shaking, shaking. And he takes Izzy by the hand, and they go back across. When Izzy comes, I say, Izzy, how do you know Rabbi Soloveitchik? I'm shaking. He looks, he says, Ani, my Zayde, his Rebbe from Berlin, his Zayde, Reb Chaim Heller, was giving Shayurim in Bernard Rebel Graduate School. Do you think, with all due respect to Moshe Schwartz, the son of my student, Alan Schwartz, Alan, Moshe, do you think you could understand? Do you think I could understand Reb Chaim Heller? So you know what used to go on? Reb Chaim Heller would speak. For 5 minutes, the Rav would stop him, and he would then explain for the next 20 minutes what Reb Chaim Heller said. You follow? So this was a break. So he took the Einagel, the grandson, Izzy Perlmutter's son. Knew, do you know Rabbi Chaim Perlmutter? Who is he named for? Have you read his Sfarim on Tosfos? And by the way, I made the shidduch for him. You should be aware. That shidduch is mine. Purely mine. Michalai girl, the works. You know what I did? It's no secret. His mother was very ill, Zichrono Livracha. So it's mine, you know, to get married. He met a nice girl. He said, I tried to push someone to the women's section yesterday. So, I mean, it didn't help me, you know. You're almost bigger than me and taller than me. And nothing I do helps there. So I tried to push him in. So the girl, fabulous girl, and he liked her. But his mother was very ill. His mind wasn't on it. She went back to the States, California, and Lo Aleinu, his mother died, and he's sitting shiva. I don't know how I got the money together to make a long distance call then. You know, no one understands that today. I reached her in L.A. I think it was Beverly Hills or in the valley she lived. And I said, Rina, get back here immediately and be Menachemet Avel. The bigger miracle is she listened to me. The smaller miracle is right after Shloshim, they got engaged. You follow? So the Rav made lots of friends there, but he still was an individual. Then he had a roommate, and the roommate got someone contacted the roommate of his and said to the roommate, there are quite a few different versions, but I'll only tell it the way I heard it. It was Genachovsky, I think it was Moshe Chaim Genachovsky was the first name. He was the Talmud of Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, the Rav's father. And when the Rav went to Berlin, Genachovsky was going to Berlin. He was older than the Rav, so Reb Moshe said, you take care of my son. So he got a call, we have a girl for you. So he said, how can I go out? I have a roommate. It's not lonely, not nice. I should go out and he should be home alone. Oh, we'll find the girl for him. So they both married the girls that they were set up with. The Rav married, of course, Tanya Levitt, the Rebbetzin, who I knew so well. I write about her in Washington. Every lady should read that part on the Rebbetzin and how she saved our lives. You'll see the feminine personality. So now the Rav gets married. The Rav already has to think beyond himself. What am I going to do with my life? And here it's amazing. The Rav wanted to be a Dayan Magid Meisharim in Eastern Europe. He never revealed the place, and once again, my students know my vat. When I'm trying to predict the past, I will never say I'm 100% right. But now I will say, like I said the other day, when I predicted the past in class, I am at least 99% right. Because the Rav told it, but he didn't mention where. But I put it all together historically. Vilna never had the eye. If I start telling you everything, it'll take 10 years and I'll have my wife on my throat. Friday's a very busy day because all the grandchildren call and sometimes we speak with the good. We hear the great-grandchildren. It's a Baruch Hashem. It's a Lo Hashem. You have to, that's our future. That's the future. That's the continuity. So the Rav had an uncle in Vilna, Rav Menachem Karakovsky. Anyone who went to Stern College, there was a Professor Karakovsky in Stern College, Professor French, I believe. I believe she was a granddaughter-in-law of Rav Menachem Karakovsky. Those of you who are Lamdanim should recognize Rav Menachem Karakovsky. He was the author of Avodat HaMelech on the first part of the Rambam. The rest of the manuscript was lost in the Holocaust. Rav Menachem Karakovsky was married to the Rav's mother's sister, to Badana. The Rav's grandmother was, the Rav's mother was Pesha, and her sister, Badana, older sister, was married to Rav Menachem Karakovsky. He was of a lashon of Talmud Chacham, but very unique. Of course, he had overtones of Chachmat Yisrael, scientific Jewish scholarship. He died young, 29. This is the time, the Rav already, 1930. Now, Vilna never had a chief rabbi, but it had three dayanim. The Av Beit Din, the other dayan was the Magid Meisharim, the town crier, speaker, preacher. The other one was in charge of Kashrut, and the Rav felt he should inherit his uncle's position. I quote Rebbe now, when he once spoke about the efficacy of prayer, I never prayed harder for something in my life than to become a Rav in this city in Europe. Had the Ribbono Shel Olam answered my prayers, word by word from the Rav now, I would not be alive today, my wife would not be alive today, my children would not be alive today. So the Rav said, sometimes when our prayers are not answered, that itself is a fabulous answer, keeping us alive. But you see, he is community-oriented. The quests go beyond the chocolate milk. B'leit Breira, he now sees his father in America, because right at this time, 1930, to be scholarly accurate, it's December 1929, you can read all about it in Revel, in my, which a fourth edition just appeared, that's available, the OU. Rabbi Revel has brought Rav Moshe Soloveitchik to America. No, the Rav is married, has a child, Europe has not worked out. He decides to join his father. To be absolutely accurate, it's probably the tragedy in the history of Chicago, what you call Skokie today, or the Chicago Theological Seminary, Hebrew Theological Seminary. Skokie invites the Rav to become Rosh Yeshiva in Chicago. He arrives in America, and they send a telegram to Rav Moshe. We brought your son to America. There's nothing we can do for him. The depression leaves us penniless. It's 1932. Find a shtela for him. So here, the dream of Chicago comes to an end. Could you imagine what would be and what would have developed in Chicago had the Rav gone to Chicago in 1932? All right, if. It's the biggest word in the dictionary. Boston was having big machloket in Shechita, the Shlachtos, and a rabbi, Rav Avraham Abba Krieger, who I've taught many of his descendants, died in the middle of the machloket. It was a lot of akmas nefesh. But now there was a shtela open. It's not the type of shtela you have where you're rabbi of a shul. At that time, a community brought a so-called chief rabbi, and he was rabbi of 5-6 little Orthodox shuls in the area. Rav comes to Boston, and this is something that it's overwhelming, because when I was the Rav's Talmud, I understood there was a bit of a relationship, but I never understood the depth of it until I did my research on the Silver Era. Those years in America, the Rav stood in awe, worshiped the ground that one individual walked on, Reb Lazer Silva. He already was the Rav of Cincinnati, president of the Agudas HaRabbanim. We'll talk about him in the Monday class in the years to come, Be'ezrat Hashem. Reb Lazer tells you what the Rav wanted to be. He wanted to be an American Rav like Reb Lazer. The quest, the community, the kehillah, way beyond the selfish little youngster. Who is Reb Lazer? Again, fascinating story. Every word I'm telling you is absolute truth. And I have to tell you, I have a student, and I say this, I apologize for saying this. I have a student, I beat the heck out of him. I said, why didn't you tell me at the time? He says, Rebbe, I thought you knew it. When my work on Reb Lazer came out, I sent the Rav a copy. And the Rav then was on in years, surrounded by a shamashim, three quarters of them with my own Talmidim. And he went through the work, and I never realized. And he turned to Neil Turk and said, oh, Rabbi Rotkoff is my historian. This work, wow, art, Baruch Hashem. Now, let's talk about Reb Lazer Silva. His father was the Dushtata Rav. It's right near Kovno. Right near Kovno. His father was Nadam Goldam. Reb Lazer was an Eloi, unbelievable photographic mind. But a wise Alec walked into Vilna. He was learning by Reb Chaim Eiser at the time. He had gone to Reb Chaim Brisker, then Reb Chaim Eiser. Walked into the Strassum Library. It was the biggest rabbinic library in all of Europe. Had to get some Sfarim. Those days, not everyone had a library in their own house. The Rav often said he never saw a complete Shas in anyone's house until he went to visit Rav Velvel, his uncle, after World War I, where the Joint Distribution Committee gave out Shasim to the Rabbanim in Europe. So, he needed Sfarim. And there was a librarian there. And she was a wonderful, good-looking, sensitive young lady. And he married her. And Skivena Tumel, there was noise, people gossip. The Dushtad, a Rav, should marry a girl on his own without a shidduch. He said, the heck with all of you. And he went to America, joined his family, tried to sell insurance. They saw right away, Lei says, Nishtvaich, it's not for you. I know this intimately from his children, the story. They're all gone already. I've taught many of his descendants, but they're gone, the children. So he decided, they said, take a shtela. He winds up in Harrisburg. Harrisburg, thank God, there was nothing for the Rav to do by day. Minyan in the morning, afternoon, you gave the shir, you supervised the kashrut. He probably is the first person to become a gadol b'Yisrael on American soil. He learned day and night. He didn't have to sleep much. He'd wind up in the shul, let's say, 7 o'clock at night. He would learn till 1, 2 in the morning. Bavli Yerushalmi, his knowledge was fabulous. And he was a personality. No one got the best of Reb Lezer Silva. His money, the shul had to give his wife the money, hand-delivered, because if they gave it to him, by the time he walked home, he gave it away to anyone who came along. If you've ever watched Hechatzer, that's the way Hechatzer begins, with this young man who's getting engaged, and his parents, the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin, bought a beautiful pearl, set of pearls for the kallah, and he gives it away to some shyster who tells him in the yeshiva he's collecting for a kid who needs a special operation. That's Reb Lezer, would have given it away on the spot immediately. They had to pay the Rebbetzin. With Reb Lezer, the story is absolutely correct. He was on his way to the airport and he told the cab driver to speed up. And he was, they were late for the plane, and the police pulled him over. And the driver says, officer, I have the chief rabbi of the United States sitting in back. And Reb Lezer pops up, and Canada. That story happens to be true. There are many more about him. But you want the proof that every word I'm saying is correct? When the Rav was installed as rabbi, Reb Lezer was the featured speaker. When Reb Aaron Lichtenstein and Tova got married, Gedole Yisrael were there, Reb Moshe Feinstein, the Rav's cousin, Reb Shmuel Belkin, the president of Yeshiva University, Reb David Lifshitz, Gedole Yisrael were there. Who is Masada Kedushin? Reb Lezer said. All right. But the Rav hit the reality in America. He got involved with the kashrut. There were tremendous, those of you who have seen the documentary on the Rav that I was zeichet to bring to the world, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, not millions have seen it because they showed on Israeli TV at the 20th Yahrzeit. It was shown a number of times on Israeli TV. And it was very bad for me because when I walk the streets, no one knows who I am, where I'm coming from. It's a clean-shaven guy with a baseball cap. And the Israelis suddenly appear on TV. So, we have a lot about the kashrut scandal, both in the documentary and in the Rav, the world of. As a matter of fact, I had to get the name of the judge who did the investigation, the charges against the Rav. No one knew the name. Everyone, Toba said, everyone called him A.K. Cohn. No. I'm writing scholarship, I'd like to get the name. So I got hold of someone in Boston who went in where they have the judiciary records about what's going on in the Boston courts. And he described to me this big, tall, an Afro-American woman is sitting there, like guarding, and she's in charge. And the minute he says Soloveitchik, she says to him, oh, you mean the kashrut scandal? And she opens up the files to him, and I got all the information I needed. I later told Tova, it was Avraham K. Cohn. I have it, it's all in the Rav. So you see, the Rav was so disappointed, as Tova told me and others, he couldn't believe people could lie. People would come and testify, absolute lies, jealousy, the Shaykhtim. You read about the Machlokes, that he tried to organize it, they resisted. It's like Israel today with the strike of the people who have to test the youngsters for a driver's license. It's terrible. Self-interest outweighs public welfare. Finally, the Rav was found totally, not only innocent, but the final report praised the Rav to the sky, and it's the only time that Hapades Rabbinic Journal published an article by a conservative rabbi, Rabbi Shubo, who was a friend of the Rav, who was overwhelmed how the judge and all the investigation reached the proper conclusion, and Hapades publishes. So if anyone will ask you, did Hapades ever publish a conservative rabbi's article? The answer is yes, in the early 40s. But the Rav already was upset, and I think he wanted to retreat from the public thoroughfare. And there was a fight for the presidency of YU. This also happened at the same time. The Rav lost to Rav Shmuel Belkin. So here he is, he's lost in Boston, his dream of New York. There was a whole, if I may use a Kabbalistic word, that the Rav taught us, and I have no doubt you've seen it and studied it before, particularly if you've studied Hasidut, Tzimtzum. The Rav withdrew, wanted to withdraw. It was a cross point in his life. And then the Ribbono Shel Olam was kind to him. He gave him an opening to disappear from the public limelight. Rabbi Moshe, Rabbi Revel died. Rabbi Revel was ill. My cousin, Rabbi Revel, was ill. He died December 2nd, 1940. Bet Kislev, that year, second. By the way, Bet Kislev is Rabbi Aaron Cutler's yahrzeit and Rabbi Moshe Aaron Pelayim's yahrzeit, one of the greatest Rebbeim YU ever had. So Bet Kislev has special significance.
His grandson's coming to the call next year.
Whose grandson?
Aaron
Pelayev. What's the name?
His name is Moshe Aaron.
From Pelayev or Rosenbaum?
Pelayev.
Oh, so one second. That's his great-grandson, you mean? Can't be his grandson.
Okay.
His grandfather I knew very well, Izzy Pelayev. He's gone too. The whole world I knew. I have that too in the Rav, where the Rav cries that youth can't understand the Rebbe who relates to a world that's not tangible. Fabulous people. So now who's going to... And then, January 31st, I think it was, 1941, Reb Moshe dies suddenly. Now begins the whole machloket, who will succeed Reb Moshe. Finally, they give the Rav a one-year contract. They'll reevaluate at the end of the year. And in May 41, he gives the first she'ur that he will give in Reitz. Otiyot niknat b'mesir. It's a sugyim baba batra. How do you pass on a debt that's in an inanimate document, the shtar? Otiyot niknat b'mesir. It's the way the Rav would pronounce it. But after 47 years here, it's hard for me to talk that way. Otiyot niknat b'mesir. That was the first shear. And I need not tell you, it was a little classroom. Maybe 20 students to begin with. He withdrew from the world. No kashrut scandal, little classroom. Went back to learning full time. The Rav spoke once, I have it in the Rav, the debt I owe the yeshiva, it saved me. The Rav said, I could have lost my head either in the shlachtais or in the wedding hall. And the Rav explained himself. The Rav said, again, I live it in Yiddish, I'll say it in English if I can. The Rav said, I'm an older rabbi and a younger rabbi. I live in two worlds. The Shlachtos is where all the Agudas HaRabbanim get killed. I could have lost my head there. or a younger rabbi, funerals, weddings, speaking, public, English. Thank God I'm in the yeshiva where I have to learn day and night to give my shayurim to my wonderful students. And the Rav withdrew. And he became the focal figure, but the focal figure in Reitz, in Yeshiva University. It was a period of tremendous growth for the Rav. And he was very fortunate. If I can just make a slight comparison to Rav Aaron Cutler, all of Rav Aaron's learning was done in Europe. He came to America with a 7-year cycle of Shayurim. Remember, I learned by Rav Aaron. I know what I'm talking about. A 7-year cycle of Shayurim. In America, he had to kill himself raising funds. And I don't have to, the stories are legendary. They take him to some big Jew, and the guy threw him a $5 bill, a $10 bill. The stories are legendary. The Rav was blessed. Yeshiva University, you have to teach. The yeshiva, Rabbi Belkin, raised the money. It's a great blessing. People ask me, you're a Rosh Kollel, you're teaching a Kollel, how do you raise the money? I say, if I wanted to raise money, I would be world famous. I was offered so many positions with so many titles. But boy, was I smart. Let me remain a poor man. A poor man, but let me just teach and learn and be machadesh. All right, I had a good example in my Rebbe. But you see, when I learned in Lakewood, they maledicted two people. One was the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Ugh, wasting time, outreach, standing on street corners, tefillin, lulav, and nadashkeit. All right, you know the Litvish world. I just spoke with a student. I have a student. Remember Reuven Vinegar? That's long before your time, Danny. He's my student, early 70s. You know the name, Rabbi Vinegar? He's also why you miss my... he suffers from chassidim. Do you understand? Until today, he calls, he's going crazy with like Boima, 50,000 people looking at a Rebbe, 20,000 people here, 100,000 people here. What did they get out of it? And eyes, and one man lighting. I say, the Vilna Gaon put them in the Cherem, but they won out. What do you want out of me? Rabbi Shalala suffers until today. So when I learned in Lakewood, the Rebbe, the Rav. Why were they angry at the Rav? Forget about college, forget about Berlin. That was a minor issue. He never spoke out. Rav Aaron Cutler spoke out. Public figure. All right, read the Rav, the world, read my footnote. Yes. What happened in Boston put the Rav back into that first stance. Individualism. Keep away from the public. You're going to lose. Too much turmoil. Machloket. What does it accomplish? Tzimtzum. Labriyot. He withdrew. But you see, life has a funny way of reaching out to you. He was now a Rebbe in YU, the Rebbe, the Rav. Tremendous students. Many of them went on to very famous lifetime activities as Rebbeim, as Rabbanim, others in the secular fields, but they all related to the Rav. And there was the Rabbinical Council of America and the Halachic Commission, as it was called, pulled the Rav by the ears into the public thoroughfare again. In the early 50s, he became chairman of the Halachic Commission. And willy-nilly, that's what those words the Rav taught me, willy-nilly, he had to get involved in the public thoroughfare. And a number of times, he came out fighting. To a certain degree, he changed the course of modern Torah history. certainly when it comes to what they call the modern Orthodox world, and I just told someone last night at the wedding who asked me about the Rav, how Tova denied you can't call the Rav modern Orthodox. I said, can't call the Rav modern Orthodox? If anyone calls me modern Orthodox, I'll have Natan and Yomo beat the heck out of him. It's a disgraceful term. Don't embarrass me. I am a Torah Jew in Western context. I am not modern, and I am not narrow-minded. I am not modern Orthodox. And Tova hit the nail on the head. It's a disgrace to call the Rav modern Orthodox. But the world today, modern Orthodox, without the Rav, this world wouldn't exist. The biggest issue went public on and changed the course of Torah history. You can see it in Shira Chadasha. Shira Chadasha, or the special Drisha Minyan, or the partnership Minyanim, are absolutely 100% conservative Judaism. There are no and, ifs, or buts. Thank God that today everyone agrees with me. When I first said it 10 years ago, I'm called the Haredi on the Gris faculty. All right, I'm proud to be the Haredi on the Gris faculty. But everyone today understands. Women are reading the Torah, women are davening for the Yomid, now they're already davening Maariv, Maariv's Rishut, not Chovah. It's unbelievable what's happened there. But a machitza they have. Three women, three men, you understand? If Shvi, 1 week of Maftir, 1 week of Warm, Shem Yerachem. But a machitza they have, that's because of the Rav. The Rav, there was no, when I was getting smicha, the only question they asked the Reitz graduates, will you take a shtela without a machitza? That was the only question they asked us. And I was one of those who said no. All right. Some of my friends took, some changed, some remained Orthodox in the conservative temple, some became top-notch conservative rabbis, lo aleinu. The Rav went public, actually published, something he never did before. The Brisker madness of perfectionism. The Rav gave testimony in court. Boy, did he go public. That was one issue. Then another issue followed, the late 60s already. Confrontation. Dialogue with the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church, after a millennium, two millenniums, killing Jews, torturing Jews, blaming Jews for every fault in the world, creating the ability to kill 6 million men, women, and children. And suddenly they want to talk with us. And you all know the Rav went public very strongly. The famous essay, Confrontation. It was a talk he gave at RCA originally. And the Rav said, black and white, there cannot be a theological discussion between two different religions. And he held the fort. And until today, and the Catholic Church has come a long way, we have to admit there certainly is no official anti-Semitism in the Catholic Church today, but we have many of our brethren, Orthodox rabbis, would love to talk to the church, love to visit the Pope. But they all have to struggle with the Rav's point of view. I need not tell you how much has been written. Does it apply today? What level does it apply? Where can you speak? What can't you speak? But that is the Rav who, in contradistinction to Professor Avram Yoshua Heschel, the Kapishnitzer Rebbe's son and Kapishnitzer Rebbe's brother, who is in favor of dialogue, the Rav carried the day in the Torah world. There was a third issue much later in life, the mid-70s, where the Rav had to stand strong and firm. And unfortunately, we don't have the Rav today, and this issue threatens to untie the cords of a good deal of the Torah civilization. And that, of course, is the horrendous man-made problem of men who refuse to give their wives a get. All of us live in the Western world. And all of us are influenced by the Western world. And the Western world's concept of marriage is man takes a woman, woman takes a man, equals Stephen. Everything is equal. That is not the Torah concept. Man takes a wife. Ki yikach ish isha. And the Torah system is beautiful and magnificent. And yesterday at the wedding, I was amazed. They read the ketuvah. I don't know if the chatan knew what the heck he was getting into. When I'm Mishad Kedushin, you should see what I do to the chatan. Do you understand what you're reading? Atame vinitzev. Hit my grandchildren. Glimadi al katfai, b'chayai, u'batachayai. Yomo, you'll translate it later. What are you getting into? By the way, in the Haredi world, the woman should give the man the ketuvah, because she's the one who works there. As far as I see, the men sit and learn. What the heck are they giving the ketuvah? It's all a bluff. How are they going to support it? But as Murray Rebbe used to say, the Torah system is beautiful, but we humans can ruin it. I'm an old-fashioned individual. If a man doesn't want to give a get, the state of Israel, my daughter, by the way, was involved in some of these laws. Some of you know my eldest daughter was the first lady since Moshe Rabbeinu came down the mountain that we will celebrate on Shavuot to pass all the exams in Chayshim Mishpat and Evanessa and get Hasmacha from the chief rabbi as the first Toen Rabbani, Toenet Rabbani, proper Hebrew. She also, then she went to Hebrew U and... You know, she's in the bar as well, so you can handle both courts, Beit Mishpat and Beit Din. My daughter was involved. In Israel, we throw the guy into jail. And if the guy is in jail already, this my daughter helped create, the Av Beit Din can throw him into solitary confinement. We do have problems in Israel, but very few. Generally, the problems are created when the man or the woman leave the country. Then it's very hard to enforce the Beitin's decision. I've had a lot of experience. Israel spends a fortune of money on detectives who work around the world trying to locate husbands who run away from being human beings. If a marriage breaks up, it breaks up. One of my talmidim, I'm not happy about it, and I gave a whole year of lectures how to work out a happy marriage. It's in the Monday class years ago, questions my students asked me. And I have a student, at least I'm proud of him. When his marriage broke up, he was mad, some reasons justifying, and the avetin, he was mistreated. And he got up the day of the get, he said, I'm only giving a get because my Rebbe in Yerushalayim, Rebbe Aaron HaKefet, said he will never speak to me again if I don't give the get. And I was not happy about the get, but it was over. She didn't, he gave the get, Baruch Hashem. But Hafkat Kedushin, wholesale, retroactive annulment of marriage is not a solution. You got to understand Shas, you got to understand Poskim. In the Kollel, I spent 2 years on Hafkat Kedushin. I've published in Rakafar and Chelik Gimel that's coming out this summer. It's not there, but what we plan, Chelik Dalet, it will be there. What I published, it's black and white. You have to know, this is not for kids' play. Suddenly he throws out Hafkat Kedushin. No, there are 1,000 concepts in the Gemara. But you have to understand, halacha lemaisa, what you can do, what you can't do. If we can just say Hafkat Kedushin, I quote Moriah Rebbe. Rebbe said, what do we need your vomit for? 2 prakim at the end? What do we need Simon Yud Zion? I have a volume coming out this summer, 350 pages, it's all based upon Shurim given in this very room, essentially dedicated to Aguna, the classic Aguna. No, what do you need a classic Aguna? What did you need? Hundreds of thousands of millions of pages of rabbinic Jew. What did you need Rabbi Schochan Inspector for? Be Mafkiya Kedushin. We're cutting the branch of the very tree we sit on. Either we bow to halacha, or we're not Torah Jews. It'll disappear. You can't keep Judaism going when there's no halacha, period. The Pooh Report, Baruch Hashem, certifies what I just said. Do I need the Pooh Report? Just look what happened since Mendelssohn stepped out of the ghetto, 1762. So Rebbe played a tremendous role. There's so much more to talk about. The Rav had the most fascinating life you can imagine. The Lubavitcher Rebbe wandered, but didn't wander as much as the Rav. The Rav's life, Pruzhana, brisk, Rezain, Chaslavich, where he really was impressionable years, Warsaw, Berlin, Boston. I say about the Rav, the main concept is the big three B's, Brisk, Berlin, and Boston. He struggled. The quests of an individual, maybe Adam won. The quest of a communal figure, maybe Adam too. He struggled. Life was not easy. But ultimately, he won out, and he was totally at peace with himself. And here I'll contrast him very briefly. I hope you understand every word I've mentioned. Have a year of lectures on that word. Contrast them very briefly with another American Rosh Yeshiva who also struggled. Who is he? Also a genius, a child prodigy. Now, who am I talking about? Reb Yitzchak Kuttner, who went to Chaim Berlin here. Who heard of Rechov Rav Chaim Berlin? Where am I going from here? Rechov Rav Chaim Berlin Chai. I paid extra money. I could have bought on Chernichovsky 5,000 lira cheaper. 69, they were building these streets. I should live on Shol Chernichovsky Street, named after an Apikiris Gomer, what he wrote in his poetry about tying the tefillin up in the wilds and sands of Canaan. The way he died, that I can't tell in mixed company. Rav Chaim Berlin. No, Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, Warsaw Eloy, Slabatka, no, help me out, Chevron, back to Warsaw, Berlin, Yerushalayim, Rav Cook, New York, RJJ, Chaim Berlin, came to America, clean shaven, short clothes, mutton clothes. Within a year, Rav Yitzchak Kuttner was speaking perfect English. You know his daughter. He has one child, Dr. Bruria Kuttner. She has her father's mind. Doctorate at Columbia, brilliant doctorate. Adam, did you get me that doctorate? Was it you? Someone in the Kolos 2 years ago. Oh, no, I remember who it was. The other fellow from Hungary. That's how I put it. That's how the brainwaves cross. He got me the doctorate. Brilliant. She was my wife's classmate in Hunter. Brilliant lady. Wow. Look at Rav Kuttner. Slowly but surely, Litvisher Rosh Yeshiva, that disappears. Hasidic Rebbe. Rav Cook's picture comes down. Chazal Nisha's picture goes up. In the 70s, this famous article, Mamish Yoyel, the Satmu Ruv's Teira, Reb Yoyelish. Zionism. Interesting. The Rav comes to America. Visions. Rabbi. Afterwards, Rosh Yeshiva. The most humble, simplest person in the world. Opened the door, answered the phone. I'll tell you one story before I quote a Gemara to end off. Again, I'm an eyewitness. I don't even know if the Baal Dover involved remembers this story, but my memory, when it comes to Shas and Paiskim, I don't remember anything. When it comes to baseball and good stories, I remember it like it was a minute before. So let me tell you a little story that happened in room 202. Jerry Blau, you know him as Rav Yosef Blau, right? Jerry Blau came back from Israel. He was the first to go to Israel, Karen Biavna. He came back and he picked up the Israeli habit of speaking. So we're talking with Rebbe after class, and we were, you know, we were among the good students. And Jerry says, the Rav said, and Rebbe goes, well, who are you talking about? What name? Rebbe, I mean you. So say you. You said. The Rav couldn't handle it that he's talking to him third person. You see, there was such a shift here. And I told the story, I think I told it last night. If I told it in class, you can stop me. It's being publicized. All right, I'll tell the story. It's the early 50s. The Rav learned how to drive. So everyone has a different version. I can tell you the version as it was because we heard it in the early 50s. So he smacked up the car. So the Balabatim in Boston, what's your first name, Rabbi Frankel?
Alex.
So the Balabatim in Boston, you're sitting next to a good fellow, Danny. He's related to Rabbi Levine. There's a whole story there. So Baruch Hashem. But he has to live up to it. That will tell you in 50 years. So the Balabatim came to the Rav, and they said, Rebbe, driving is not for you. It's for someone who doesn't have a Rambam and a Raiva, after Mayach and Tracht and learning, you know, thinks and learning. Number two, they came to him, Rebbe, the hat you wear, everyone in Boston looks up to you. He was no longer getting a second, he was no longer a rabbi in Boston. He was no longer just my, he never got a salary, not from the rabbinate now, not from my mandaris. He did give a heksha to Morrison and Schiff. It was a very good salami. I don't know if it exists today. But they said, everyone looks up to you as the Rav of Boston. And you wear that cap. He wore caps. See, I saw a picture of Rav in a baseball cap and in a sporty cap. Like I wear exactly the caps I wear. Rebbe was there, I would trade caps with him. So it's not because of it. So the Rav, you're right about the driving. The Rav never drove again. His wife drove. It was a Dodge, a black Dodge. I remember like yesterday. They were driving on Monday, parking for Yeshiva. His mother lived across the street. And Tuesday, Wednesday, he said, Shan. Yeah, Thursday, they drove back. Later, he flew, and it was a different story because flying became more popular. It was a lot easier than driving. But when it came to the hat, the Rav said, what are you talking about? You can't tell me what to do. My Zayda, how did Rav Chaim go? And you ever saw pictures of Chaim? I would ask, how did the Chafetz Chaim go? You just saw the movie of the Chafetz Chaim that turned up. Look at the hat the Chafetz Chaim is wearing. Oh boy, that he wouldn't give in. And that was the Rav. In the 30s, he wore a Bekesher in Shabbos. And by the 50s, 60s, 70s, he would come to class, a jacket, a sports jacket. His hats were blue, were gray, were brown. The Rav's favorite color was brown. That's why I did the Rav in two different shades. There's the Chafetz Chaim, there's my proof. Yeah, you'll show it later, everyone knows that. I did the Rav in two different shades. So I want to end off. We spent this Friday morning with some wonderful, wonderful students and their wives. The future of our people, to a certain degree, rests upon your shoulders. I can only tell you, you have a choice in life, those of you from the United States or Canada, to just be another social security number or to change the course of your people's history where it counts, right here, al admat HaKodesh. Malk and I are overwhelmed at times. What we saw when we came and what it was like 47 years ago and where we're up today. And it can only go mechayil el chayil. The Rav once said about candle lighting that really the shita that we should light 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 is correct. Physically, it's correct. You burned a little oil every day. But when it represents spirituality, if you work and are sincere and do, it can only get better. The Ribbono Shel Olam will bless us. So it can only get better. So these are a few words about the Rav's life, and I leave it to you, for you, over Shabbat, to put it into context. I want to end off by thanking my students. And now you'll understand those that are listening. I meet so many people who claim they're my students and they've listened to hundreds of shirim. I just met someone who said he's heard over 1,000 shirim. And they're all excited to meet me. And at times I'm embarrassed. Someone started twice, three times already it happened. People meet me, they hear the voice and they start crying. I said, well, what's going on here? But you see, a student that the Rebbe doesn't see, it's a student, but it's not the same. And that itself is an open Gemara. The Rebbe said this when he was honored at the RCA towards the end of his active teaching career. And they thanked Rebbe for all he taught them. And Rebbe said, I have this in the Rav, the world of, Rebbe said, I may even have it in Washington, I don't recall. And Rebbe said, I want to thank you. And he quoted the Gemara in Tainet, Daf Zayin Amud Aleph, that Mitalmidai Yotem Mikulam. A Rebbe learns more from his students than anyone else. And the Gemara says so beautifully, the Rambam in Hilchot Talmud Torah elaborates the drop. You inspire the Rebbe. Your questions, your eyes. When I'm teaching, I see eyes. Sometimes I see eyes dancing, and it tells me I'm on the right track. I have to go further. And that, the Gemara says so beautifully. Sure, the Rebbe knows more. He's older. He's learned many more years. The Rebbe has seen the Gedolei Yisrael of the previous generation. But it's like a little match. The student kindles the flame and the flame becomes all the stronger. So I want to thank you very much for being my talmidim. And as the year ends, those of you who are not coming back should go out and be successful. Lahagdil Torah ulahadira. Shabbat shalom, besorah tova talein of Al-Khol Yisrael. And you know how I end every class. Das Vedanya. Thank you very, very much.